Fair enough.
It's got an armadillo that gives him head.
Next. This is Lug Radio, you're listening to. It's season 2, episode 12. That makes it episode 24 if you keep it up. We've been here We've been here doing this for over a year.
You take tablets
now,
to keep it up, though.
The old blue ones.
Shut up.
Sorry, guys, what are we going to do in this episode?
Alan Cox. Let's do Alan Cox.
You might have heard of him. He's relatively well known.
We're going to talk about desktops.
And why we don't need them.
Yeah.
And let's get angry.
Yeah, we're going to have an angry
game. Jono and Ak are going to get angry.
And we're finally going to announce a price for and how you can come to Lug Radio Live.
And some of the speakers.
Yeah, we've got some speakers confirmed.
And the paintball.
Yes, the paintball is happening, you unbelieving buggers.
So let's get on with it.
It's
come on.
Be great, let's go.
Come on!
In this show, we're going to speak to Alan Cox.
Alan Cox.
Nice one, boy.
Colonel Hacker. Indeed. We're going to get him on the line.
Thesis bloke.
Highly regarded Colonel Hacker as well.
Yeah.
He's a bit of a celebrity.
Yep.
So, knowledgeable, superb.
So we'll be celebrating with him
and
tonight.
And he's got a large beard as well. Alan Cox and a chip. I think you just love that. Let's speak to the guy.
Hello?
Hi, Alan. You're on Lug Radio.
Hello.
Hi.
How are
you doing?
All right, thank you.
Good. So, let's get started. What are you working on at the moment? What kind of stuff are you hacking on?
Mostly my thesis.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Which unfortunately doesn't lend itself to all the various computing shortcuts.
Right. Fair enough. So, what are you specifically writing your thesis on?
I'm looking at Linux use on the desktop.
Hooray!
Yes.
So, talking to people who are using Linux on the desktop, people who are considering it.
Right.
And consultants and other people rolling it out as well.
Right.
And the initial idea was to look at whether things like the difference between GNOME and KDE were a problem.
Yeah,
and
okay.
To try and answer why GNOME and KDE both exist.
Right.
I mean, you might think initially that's a strange question, but if you look at almost every other free software project, there is a major version of this piece of software, like, for example, Apache.
Right.
And the other software which exists of the same type is very much specialist, so it's very fast or very small. So things like Boa, for example.
Yeah.
It's been interesting. It's taken some slightly unexpected turns.
I can imagine.
One thing I've discovered is that customers really don't seem to be bothered by the GNOME KD thing.
No.
Most of them aren't aware that there are two separate desktops.
Okay.
Which is good in some ways.
So, well, I mean, in terms of, obviously, your experience as a kernel hacker, what kind of stuff do you think, from your own perspective and your experiences with the kernel, what kind of stuff do you think still needs to be done from a kind of a device level or something like that?
There's certain things the kernel needs to be better at. A lot of those are actually telling use space things dynamically.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
The Unix model really goes back a long way to the days when your computer was one shape, you turned it on and it stayed that shape.
Right, okay, yeah.
Obviously today's PC is very different. You turn it on, you plug all sorts of gadgets in. And we still have work to do in dealing with some of these things very nicely.
Just going back to your point about the desktop, every year it seems that people say, oh, this is the year of the desktop, this is the year of the desktop. Do you think it's the year of the desktop?
I think the problem is every year it is the year of the desktop for something.
Year of a desktop.
I've talked to various people. There are people I've talked to who switched from Windows to a Linux desktop in certain environments, particularly locked down environments, because the locking down on Linux was better than Windows.
So as in, from a security point of
view, Linux is already making real inroads. If you talk about the home user who wants to sort of fire up whatever the latest first-person shooter is, massacre 500 people, and then sync their iPod, then no, we're not there for those kind of people yet.
Right, okay. Yeah. Something I wanted to ask you about, stepping away from the technical side of it a bit, is the social side of being part of the kernel hacking team, such as it is. How does it work? I mean, is there a kind of a big group dynamic, or is it just lots of people walking in roughly the same direction? And do you think it's working as well as it could be?
It's lots of people going in all sorts of different directions. it's kind of like a controlled explosion. if you get things right at the top, then the explosion gives you a rocket and you shoot upwards. If you get things wrong, then it gives you a mess.
Right.
And the mess is very much the shaping part of it.
I like that.
Right, but so with Linus there shaping it, it all does seem to work. Will it
not always.
No.
It mostly works.
I must confess, I've never heard Apple describe the MacOS as being a controlled explosion, so that's got to be a bonus point.
No, but I've heard Windows described as an uncontrolled explosion.
You were talking about Linus being the guiding shaper of the explosion there. Do you think the Linux kernel could ever work without Linus?
Oh, we could certainly work without Linus. I mean, Andrew Morton would be the person who took over if Linus just one day decided he'd had enough.
So, but there'd have to be someone who wears the Linus hat.
Yes. The interesting thing, this is one thing I find fascinating, but I cannot explain, is that if you poll all the main kernel hackers at any given time, they will all tell you who the person would be who would take over Linus's hat.
Yeah.
And 90% of them plus would agree on the same person.
John O'Bacon.
Right. They wouldn't all claim it was them.
No, one or two of them might. but no one ever sits down and discusses it and sort of plans this out. So yeah. There is a kind of thing going on in the background where people know roughly where the world is going, so to speak.
Right.
In terms of social stuff in general, we do meet at things like the Kernel Summit and conferences, and it does help to meet people. You get a better feel for how they think, and also how to read their email, because sometimes you read an email from someone and you get a very wrong idea.
Totally.
There are also one or two people who are better read by email than that.
only one or two?
I have problems with that.
Alan, something that went, I mean, I saw you at Fosdem, and you just shortly before you did your talk, and it was fairly widely publicised about, you know, what you said in your talk and some of the comments about Linus Torvalds. Do you think that there's any negativity in the kernel hacking community, or is it generally a fairly plain sailing race? I mean, is there any I'm not asking you to name names, but is there any situations where fairly prominent kernel hackers really do veer off the direction of Linux, something rotten, where it can potentially harm Linux?
I don't think things ever happen in that way.
Right.
One of the things that does, I mean, there are people who do things with Linux which are completely and totally crazy. We just don't integrate those changes.
Okay.
It's not that anything necessarily wrong. I mean, some of the crazy things people are doing may well be the success of the future.
Right, yeah.
Some of them will be the disasters of research. That's what research is all about.
Yeah.
Have you got any examples of crazy things?
Someone put a Corba server into the kernel.
In the kernel?
It was fairly crazy. So they could do messaging between the kernel and external applications.
That's nuts.
Now, yeah, for all you say, though, that's nuts. If you think about the work being done now for the Dbus, the desktop notification system, it's serving very much the same function. It's just a slightly cleaner and simpler design to solve the same problem.
Right, yeah.
So many of these things are not always as nuts as they seem. They may be crazy solutions, but a lot of the crazy solutions are actually highlighting real problems.
Yeah, no, a lot of that stuff, it looks like we're almost going kind of microkernel-y. I don't want to be too technical here, because we're not a very technical show.
So you mentioned a microkernel.
But they are doing an awful lot of kind of message passing-y stuff and everything. Do you think if everyone had their time over again, it'd still be monolithic?
I think so. The kernel is, although it's monolithic, it's very modular. It tries to strike a balance between the kind of the high and mighty academic goals of wonderful abstractions and protection models, and the real world. Actually, I want to do some work on this. And it's not a trivial balance to strike.
Yeah,
I should imagine.
Most of the message passing, though, is really between the kernel and user space.
Yeah.
That's things like hot plug, where all of a sudden, not only does the kernel want to know you've added a camera, but the kernel needs to tell the desktop so the desktop can display icons. Yeah. So all of these things involve passing messages around.
Right, yeah.
Alan, one of the things that we've been talking about recently is Linux on the desktop. And obviously that's something, you know, quite important to Linux on the desktop is hot plugging and things like that. What do you think about the various distributions who are treading the fine line between, well, you know, kind of vendor lock-in and trying to make a usable, commercial, consumer-oriented Linux?
I don't see there is a line between the two. I don't see why the usable, consumer-oriented Linux has to involve lock-in. And it's interesting, when customers don't like that. With the thesis work, I talked to various customers of different companies, and one of the questions asked was about problems and differences in configuration.
Right.
Now, I'm in desktop configuration. Almost all of them answered with a rant about the fact that the system configuration tools are different between vendors.
Right.
So they really don't like that kind of thing, and they are aware of it.
Right. Okay.
Alan, something that I'd be interested to talk to you about. I know, we talked about it at FOSDEM, but something for the benefit of the listeners is I asked you about your thoughts on the whole ABI issue, on the fact that, for people who aren't familiar with this issue, it's where the kernel does not provide a standard binary interface, so you can't take one kernel module from one particular kernel and run it on another. What are your views on getting around this in an age where increasingly people want to add devices and add support for devices?
It's not something I think the kernel community in general is interested in solving. We gain an astronomical amount by having a much more flexible interface.
Right.
And it raises some packaging problems for end users. People like Dell have been addressing this. They have a thing called DKMS.
Yeah.
Which is designed just to sort of rebuild and package up drivers. The enterprise vendors, both Red Hat and SUSE, do give binary guarantees on their enterprise products. But, I mean, the customer pays a huge cost for that, not just in terms of what they actually comes out of the checkbook, but in terms of the ability to add new features.
Yeah.
Now, enterprise customers don't generally mind that because they want it to keep working rather than wanting new feature X.
Right, yeah.
Okay, I mean, just changing the tack of things slightly, Alan. In panador de os gwelkin tha?
Not bad.
Is that mocking laughter?
There's always got to be some kind of international sound, hasn't there?
Sorry, I tried that once on some Welsh distant relatives.
They got a slap in the face.
It was okay.
Bought you a cup of wallpaper.
I understood anyway.
Oh, brilliant. Seriously though, one thing that I've been reading about recently is the whole kind of idea of trusted or trustworthy computing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of concerns me for the future of Linux, because there's this whole idea of building in DRM and basically lockdown systems into the CPU. How can Linux, a free and open source kernel, exist in such an environment, do you think?
It's one of the things that the GPL3 licensing draft has been looking at. There's actually a sort of a question whether you can lock up Linux using DRM anyway, because the GPL license talks about all of the scripts and other items necessary to recreate the binary.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
There is an argument which most people believe holds some legal water, but that would include the encryption key.
Right, okay.
Right, so if I can't sign my binary, then I haven't got all the sources as the GPL requires.
But at that point, if it's then, if it is illegal to, or if we are unable to distribute the encryption key, you then can't distribute the source under GPL, which means Linux just goes away, doesn't it?
For those kinds of devices, but I think stopping at a very, very specific market. If you talk to the people in the PC world and in sort of the generic purpose computer world, they are very, very aware of and are surprisingly sensitive to some of the security issues and also the sort of the privacy and other concerns people have.
Right, okay.
What it really comes down to is who controls the keys.
Yeah, right.
What I mean by that is if you have a system where the person who controls the keys is the owner of the machine, then I can do things like I can create a piece of software, proprietary software, like a DVD player, which only runs on in a specific certain release that I trust of some software.
Yeah.
But I gain no magic power over your computer. You can trust whatever you like, and you give out your own keys.
Okay.
So it may not spell the end for Linux then, and I can stop panicking.
Digital rights management is kind of like the atom bomb. Once you've invented it, you can do all sorts of good and bad things with it.
There is a real need
for government to regulate the bad uses of it. It's a great way to create lock-in, great way to create monopolies, a great way to abuse all sorts of commercial and economic systems we rely on.
Do you think people will stand for it, though? Because, I mean, people kind of, shall we say, for want of any kind of clue about the subject, are currently buying up things like Apple's in DRM-infested music and stuff like that. But that's because there isn't an alternative that they can buy without getting sued by whoever.
That's not true. You can go to places like Magnatune.com and get DRM-free music.
You can't get Boyzone.
That's obviously a concern, Matt.
There is a balance to be struck. Analog rights management effectively is very, very old. It goes back to things like tape-to-tape copying and video.
Yeah. Yeah, Macrovision, whatever it's called.
Yeah, and similar things were done with computer games on tape to make them hard to copy.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
And on floppy disks to make them hard to copy. So the idea, what seems to happen is that people will stand a certain amount of that for what they deem to be fair.
Mm.
So people seem to be reasonably happy with the app one because they can see that they consider the restrictions it places, the fact you can burn it on CD, as acceptable. You know, they're not too onerous.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
And there's two parts of that. One, I think, is what customers will stand for, and obviously the more educated they get, the more they will demand things that they're allowed to do. So once they discover that there is some function X, Y, Z that they didn't know about and they can't do it, then they will get upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's the issue there, looking back at the Linux and trusted computing rather than music particularly, is that while all the customers are using, going out and buying machines with Windows on them, and Windows runs on these trusted computing machines, they don't know that they have the option to move to Linux, and therefore they don't know it's an option that's being taken away from them.
But there's only one PC-like system I have seen which is locked to a specific operating system. And that was a system which was done as a very low-power, cheap computing system for a third-world project.
Oh, right.
And as I understand it, there were specific reasons it was locked to certain software were to prevent the, basically, UN and other government-funded machines being stolen, reused for other purposes.
Oh, right.
Right.
So that's an example of the atom bomb being used for a good thing.
If you look at the trusted computing stuff as it currently stands, I've got to be careful what I say because I know a bit more than some of the public do.
Okay. Go on, tell us, Alan.
We won't tell anybody.
No.
The public stuff about trusted computing doesn't really stop you running an operating system of your choice.
Right.
What it does is to allow someone to create software which will then refuse to run on that.
Right. Yeah.
So it might be a problem, more of a problem for things like Wine. Because a protected DVD player will look at the system and go, this isn't a trusted copy of Windows XP. I'm not going to run on this system. It's not a problem in the incarnations I've seen so far in the sense of I'm sorry, your computer runs this operating system. If you change it, then we will come around and arrest you.
Okay, yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, Alan, I'm really sorry, because I've got so much more I want to ask you. But,
yeah, definitely.
Really, we're just kind of on a limit, as always.
We can always do a 5-minute catch-up in the future.
So, but thank you very much for joining us this evening. It's been really, really interesting. Is there any chance we could maybe catch up with you another time in a few weeks' time?
Yeah, sure.
Excellent stuff. And Alan, I've got one last question. Are you ever going to write your blog in English again?
Well, I haven't updated it since pretty much when I started the MBA. I've just not had time.
Right. You see, I never knew that, because I don't read Welsh. Even
well,
basic Welsh.
The page hasn't changed, and the date on the page hasn't changed.
Oh, right, okay. Just before we go, could you do us one quick favour?
Yeah?
Could you just say, I am Alan Cox, and you're listening to Lug Radio.
I am Alan Cox, and you are listening to Lug Radio.
Now in Welsh.
Thanks, yes, now say it in Welsh.
Oh, I now have to think about this and get it right. Alan Adwi and Akeen, help. Is it bad? I've been speaking Welsh downstairs for an hour now. My brain's under mushroom.
Never mind.
Alan Cox Adwi and Akeen Clywed, Lug Radio.
Fantastic.
Hey, thank you. Very much indeed.
Thanks very much, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Give us a bell on the Lug Radio voicemail on 0870 931 1730. If you're international, call on +44 870 931 1730. Try and keep it under about 30 seconds and it might just get off.
We've spent some considerable time talking about GNOME and KDE, or mainly talking about GNOME and ignoring KDE, but nonetheless. We spoke about KDE in the last show. And we've talked about those. Aid has asked questions about XFCE in the past,
and which got flatly refused. If I remember,
they didn't. The questions didn't get refused. We said it was arse.
I believe you said it was arse.
You said it was arse. I said it was arse. No one disagreed with me, but
you didn't hear anyone disagree with you.
Essentially, we've taken as read the fact that you need a desktop environment.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, I've set up two Linux machines, Ubuntu machines, it happens.
Oh, surprise.
Surprisingly enough, but you know, it's what I know about, in the last week or so, and they're not particularly powerful machines, but they're not, you know, P100s or anything like that. One of them's a P500 or so laptop. Okay. They're reasonably powerful machines.
Machines from the last century we're talking about, aren't we?
Yeah, but they're good machines from the last century, you know. Okay. And GNOME was running a little bit slower than they were a little bit tight for memory. So I thought, well, the people I'm setting them up for, they're going to be word processing, they're going to be using Firefox to browse the web, and they're going to be reading email with Thunderbird.
Yeah.
What the hell do they need a desktop environment for? So I fucked GNOME off.
Well, they need
off,
something, don't they?
And installed Fluxbox.
I agree with that. You don't need it.
Oh, hang on. Isn't Fluxbox a desktop environment?
No, it's a window manager. It doesn't do anything. So all it does is show Windows.
So what's the difference between a window manager and a desktop environment?
The whole point of a desktop environment is it provides a shared structure which applications can hook into.
Including the clipboard.
Yeah. And
no fucking clipboard in Linux, is there? There isn't a clipboard, is there?
There is.
There's no clipboard.
Well, not for about 4 years.
Go into gedit, copy something to the clipboard, close gedit, and then go and paste it somewhere else. No clipboard.
Ah.
The clipboard gone.
Really?
Where clipboard go?
So when you say there's no clipboard, you mean there's no separate clipboard which is apart from every application?
It's like every application's got its own clipboard, and if you close the application before you paste out of it, it's gone.
Sort of. What happens is when you try and paste somewhere else, it doesn't store it anywhere in the interim. When you paste it to the application, it says to the X server, give me the selected bit, and the X server says to the application which has got the selected bit in it, tell me what it is. Which means that application isn't there anymore, there's nothing selected. So the X server goes, there's nothing on the clipboard.
Very shit.
It is shit.
But for God's sake, if you can't have a fucking clipboard.
But it must have changed recently. I mean, there's a thing called K-Clipboard that has been for years.
But that's
KDE.
A KDE thing, isn't it?
But the point is that if it's in there, I'm sure it's a free desktop standard.
But what's the point of having a desktop environment if you can't even get a clipboard right?
There is a standard between different desktops, as far as I'm aware, free desktop.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a free desktop.
But it isn't on the same.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it is bollocks. I mean,
migrating to a desktop from Windows is going to, like, it keeps losing my clipboard. Fuck this, I'll go back to Windows.
Yeah, sure. I've not had any problems under Ubuntu, I have to say. But then,
I've
maybe I've just been keeping
either.
The program open.
You're probably mentally working around the issue.
It's possible. I'll be
because now I've started not closing the application before I paste the clipboard away, then close it.
I'll be honest with you, I very rarely, for whatever reason, find myself copying something out of an application, then closing that application, and then pasting it.
So you're probably subliminally working around
it. I don't know whether I'm working. I don't think I find myself copying something, pasting it, and then going back and closing the original application. Mm-hmm. But that's because I only run about 4 applications. They're all running all the time.
Anyway, your question is, do we need a desktop?
Back to my major point. Right, so you get to the GDM login screen in Ubuntu, and you log in, and Fluxbox goes, bing, running. That's brilliant! And I thought, Christ, I've forgotten about machines being like this.
I ran Damn Small Linux recently, and that uses Fusebox, is it? Not Fusebox, Fluxbox.
It's Fluxbox.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. And it's very fast.
Okay, so brilliant, but what do you lose?
Well,
this is really the point.
If you look at something like GNOME, for example, you lose Nautilus, which is a very good file manager.
Theoretically,
you can run Nautilus without running the whole GNOME desktop, but as soon as you start Nautilus, it starts up 3/4 of GNOME in its head anyway. You lose central configuration of stuff.
But most of this is unimportant.
Most
of this is...
things like when an application wants to start up a web browser. If it's a GNOME application, then they'll all ask GNOME what your web browser is, and you only have to configure it in one place.
Oh, I see. Right.
Before that happened, you have to tell every application individually what your web browser was, which means that, you know, even now, occasionally I'll have something and I'll click on a URL and it'll open it in the Mozilla suite rather than Mozilla Firefox or whatever, which is really, really irritating. So it's not working now anyway.
Okay, so if I, let's take an analogy. If I want a car that's fast, fuel efficient, and quite cool, I'll get myself a Lotus because they don't bother putting carpets in. They drill holes in the window winders so that they weigh less, and they don't put a stereo in so that it's really fuel efficient and goes very, very fast. But I don't want that. I want something that's comfortable to drive, easy to use.
Bulletproof glass.
So I have a car that's got electric windows, got a stereo, got carpets, got a nice big boot. I personally think I'd make the choice to go with GNOME every time.
The difference is the type of user that you're targeting.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
I think the problem is that, as we've said before, in a lot of situations, people have to work around software. And essentially what Ack is saying is that he's made the software work around the people. The person didn't necessarily need half the stuff that was in the desktop environment.
No.
So the software has been applied where necessary.
I have to say,
if I was to set up my dad a system, my dad wouldn't need half of that shit. I'd just basically set him up a screen with 3 icons in the middle.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
yeah, and that's all
you
need.
You would definitely never need anything else.
I have to say,
it doesn't stop you running other applications. It stops you having the integration. And one other major thing that it does is that it seriously reduces the pool of applications on which you can draw. For instance, if you run game...
But how many applications do you ever run?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you want to run game for IM, for example, then it's at least partially a GNOME application.
Yeah.
If you want to run Evolution to read your mail, then it's at least partially a GNOME application. So we end up putting a lot of that stuff anyway. You know, in the same way that if you want to start up Kmail and you're not running KDE at the moment, it takes quite a long time to start up because it starts up KStyle.
When I first installed Linux years back, it was on a laptop, and I think it might have been Red Hat 6. Something or other. And the other operating system that had been on the laptop was Windows 98, and the Red Hat operating system ran significantly faster than Windows 98. And I was like, wow, this is cool. These days, if I dual boot, XP runs a hell of a lot quicker than
Nimbus. Right there.
A hell of a lot quicker.
It does.
It's not just in it's not just desktop speed. Something I discovered today was that ripping CDs is a lot quicker.
Legal ones, of course.
Oh yeah,
Seraphidian CD. Love Radio does not condone
ripping a Seraphidian CD. Right, is a lot quicker in Windows than it is in Linux. A lot quicker by a magnitude.
That could be hardware integration and stuff like that.
I don't think it is. I think what that is, having read a lot of the weblogs that the Windows kernel hackers, people like Raymond Chen write and so on and so forth, I think that's because GNOME is younger, they've managed to develop a desktop which I think is roughly equivalent in power and usability to Windows, but they haven't spent 10 years optimizing every single call into it.
Maybe they need to write it in a high level language then.
A lot of the stuff that you see on things like Planet Gnome recently, they've talked about high memory usage in things like Gnome Terminal, which is fucking atrocious, by the way.
Yeah.
Gnome Terminal, people. I say, I want a terminal window, it should pop up instantly. It's just a bash shell in a window.
Just as a quick aside about burning CDs. Stuff,
but who cares?
Just as a quick aside about burning CDs, you notice that Nero is going to be released on Linux now.
It is. Yeah.
I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
It's, it's still proprietary, isn't it?
No, I think it's still free. I think it's free as in beer. Free as in beer, but you don't get the source.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but so that's just a little aside. Anyway.
Nero was ever free as in beer on Windows, was it? You have to pay for it.
I never understood the free beer thing, because I've never been given free beer. Does such a thing exist? I'm going to put some free beer, please. I get fucking thrown out.
it depends on your point of view. I don't think anyone... I don't think they gave away Nero for free if you went to the website, but everyone in the world who would care about it...
When you buy a CD player, you get Nero. Yeah.
But back to the desktop, there's something... I think a lot of the issue here with the locking down the desktop thing is to do with a lot of people lock down a desktop and make a kiosk mode out of it, which is part of the reason why, you know, if you go to a lot of networks, they lock it out so hard you can't do half the stuff that you're going to use doing a typical desktop.
Mm-hmm.
And half the stuff in GNOME, in many ways, I think GNOME's a lot better than KDE in this regard, in the fact that there's a lot of stuff in KDE that even technical people don't need to use.
Mm.
But for people such as our dads or whatever, and not necessarily going to
need mums.
Yeah. All mums.
Look, radio is not sexist.
No. Just Balchor is.
All I said was you wouldn't employ a woman in a technical position.
No, that's perfectly reasonable, isn't it?
Moving on. But, yeah, I mean, it's not that I'd want to lock my dad's computer down so it couldn't run anything else, but essentially he'd be quite happy with a machine that runs in kiosk mode and will only start up an email application, a web browser, and OpenOffice 2. Because that's all he uses.
All right, that's okay. So, for a 500 megahertz Pentium 2 or whatever, that's brilliant. Because what you're doing is you're doing the old Linux thing of basically empowering an old bit of hardware. But okay, sorry, John, what do you want to say?
Sorry, I was just going to say one final thing which I meant to say but I forgot. You know, you mentioned the issue of we all said that the issue of XP is a lot quicker. I think part of the problem with GNOME and KDE and all the rest of it is because we've got... There's more of an abstraction between the different layers.
Exactly.
Yeah. You've got things like KDE and GNOME projects are working within their own little community, but they don't...
XP has an abstraction layer.
No, but it's all coming from one source.
The hardware abstraction layer.
No. What I mean is you've got the GNOME project, okay?
Right.
And the GNOME project optimise that project. And then, you've got X.org, and they'll optimise that project. But they won't necessarily optimise between the two.
Oh, I see.
It's not really being optimised as a whole stack.
So something like the Novell desktop, you would think maybe might do that?
What was that?
Something like the Novell desktop?
But then they'd have to hack every single component of the Linux operating system their operating system to work together.
It's
and
not viable.
Too much work.
Because they're a distributor. They're putting software together and they're not necessarily optimised now.
The only people who could realistically do that, in my opinion, are Red Hat. Because Red Hat employ people at pretty much every level of the stack.
I agree. Yeah.
And Red Hat haven't done it. Although Fedora may be better than most distributions at this. So perhaps Red Hat have done it, but they haven't done it anywhere near as much as the Windows people have.
I think they've optimised parts of it. Like I think they did a lot of GCC optimisation, and they optimised bits.
And they've done a lot of X
optimisation. And yeah, a lot of X stuff. Like have it Pennington.
I still think we need a desktop if we're going to get more and more people using Linux on their desktops. I think they need a desktop, if you see what I mean.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, this is what
so if you go into a corporation, you're not going to give them XFCE.
No. I mean, I agree in things like corporate environments, mm-hmm. but I'm halfway convinced, I'm not 100% convinced on this, but I wanted to bring it up, that we can convince the mums and dads of this world, the sort of people who we think would be reasonable candidates to move to Linux now because they don't do very much with their computers, we might be able to convince them more easily by not trying to give them GNOME and demanding they have a 2.8 gigahertz brand new PC.
Right. Mm. This, I mean, recently I was involved in helping set
group
up someone's...
Six.
Shut up. Recently I was involved in trying to help someone set up their new Windows XP PC. I didn't have much choice. It was a thing that... one of Lynn's friends. And
probably came with it pre-installed, didn't it?
It did, but I didn't have any choice in whether I got to act as
free technical support. There's nothing to set up then.
As to whether I got to act as free technical support, there is. You have to plug things in and stuff like
you
that.
You do have a choice. What you do is you go, eat my deck. I'm not helping you install Linux on it.
It's pre-installed.
So anyway,
I set it all up, and there were loads and loads of questions coming up, and there was all sorts of stuff. And I was thinking to myself, I just wish there was some way that we wouldn't have to have all this additional crap for people like this. So all they want to do is click on internet, click on word processor, click on email, and they'll get the things that they want.
I'm with the Axe School of Support here, by the way.
Yeah. So I'm with you on that, yeah. I think for certain situations, particularly where you're using older hardware and that, great, yeah, let's cut out all the crap and have a system that just does what you need.
It's called XP.
But I'm not sure that I agree with your general question, or I wouldn't say yes to your general question, which is, I think we should get rid of the desktop, or we don't need the desktop. I think we
need it for general users.
Yeah,
but for specific individual cases, we don't necessarily need it.
I'm not even sure that we do need, because I don't think there's such a thing as a general user. I think there's a general of like our dad user, and there's a general corporate user, and there's a general
what I'm talking about
wants to do a bit more on their computer.
I'm talking about generalist.
I'm talking about people who are at least reasonably technically savvy with a computer. People who can load up, people who know what files are, people who can load up files.
Corporate end users.
Yeah, people, basically end users like that. Now, they're going to need to store their files in different directories. They're going to need to move these things around, and they're going to want to set up specific parts of their system.
More importantly, people like that are going to want to cut and paste some text out of a web page into the word processor and have the formatting go with it. But that's the sort of thing
you need to do. And not worry that they can't close the app
beforehand.
And
I agree with you. My dad doesn't need that, and I don't think an awful lot of people's dads don't need
it. I don't know your dad, but I know that just about that's everyone fit. Who
I know him intimately.
I know that
I sincerely hope not.
I know
Mummy.
Just about everyone I know who has a PC, even if at the beginning they're not at all computer literate and they know nothing about it and they show no sign of even wanting to get into it, they will eventually start to explore around and they will want to start doing different things, and I don't think we should limit people, particularly under Linux, to be able to do that for themselves.
Okay, all I wanted to say realistically was we don't necessarily have to assume that any new Linux machine that comes along, or any new Linux thing we push out, should
have
KDE
on it. I think it's a great point. It's a great point. Don't just assume you have to put GNOME or KDE on there.
And the great thing is we've got the choice.
And we all agree.
Of window managers.
And again, it's going back to the point, it's horses for courses.
I'll tell you something I'm angry about.
Tell me the angry thing. What are you angry about?
Release your anger.
I go to work, right? I've got a laptop, it's got wireless on it.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. I go to work, works fine at work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? Take it home. And I can't just switch from one fucking wireless network to another, can I?
I tell you what you need. XP.
That's not the solution.
I thought the fucking NetApplet thing was going to solve this. You're supposed to pop a list of wireless
networks. That's another... Oh, this is going to be really great in 5 years' time.
Oh,
not quite ready yet.
Can I just say, Fedora, I do that all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Doesn't fucking work in Ubuntu.
Nah, one more reason to use Fedora. One of the things...
Sorry.
Sorry. One reason to use Fedora. Something people have said before is there's always stuff going, yeah, isn't this really cool? We look at drop shadow shit in X.
Yeah.
And you look at all Keith Packard's screenshots of Windows having drop shadows and transparent
clocks. Is this XGL thing
that
he's talking about?
And you think, wow, that's really wicked. And then it's like, yeah, but you got to go and compile the whole fucking world to make it happen yourself.
Yeah.
And it's just not there yet, and it's wank.
Yeah, it's like, oh, everybody use Xorg, but it looks exactly the same as X386, but it's all modular and different.
Yeah.
And the licensing is nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, it's just, you know, there's an awful lot of, not vaporware, but impossible to fucking install yourself. You've got to compile it or be Keith Packard.
But
I tell you what we need a framework for. We need a framework
not
for the clipboard.
Not Martin name, is it? Help me out here, Matt.
We need a what?
A framework for the clipboard.
Shut up!
We need to invent a framework. Don't just fix a clipboard. Let's just invent a framework.
And let's make it accessible with DCOP and DBus. Yeah, that'd be really good, won't it?
Why you wouldn't just have a text file called /etc/clipboard and put the things in it?
Exactly.
Sounds like a framework. No, it sounds like a solution.
Piss off.
Going back to the wireless thing, right? I'm generally angry about this, right?
Come on, you don't sound very angry.
I'm relatively.
Are you?
I'm slightly annoyed.
I'm seething with own fury. No, the thing that fucks me off about it is the fact that, I mean, I don't think I'm the only person who suffers from this affliction. I've seen people writing about it on the interweb.
Really? Because I use two internet cafes in town and my own network at home, which is wept. Two aren't. One is.
Maybe it's just
it's a gay.
Ah, this links into another angry thing.
Hang on, does it switch automatically? You just walk into home and it goes, aha, I'm at home, and connects up.
Well, yeah, and I just have to paste the key in, my web key. That's all I have to do.
Why do you have to tell it your web key every go?
Because I cut it out when I go into town.
Why?
Because in town they don't use web.
But surely that's the point. You set up each network separately and then it just switches between.
You should have a profile for each one.
I thought that's what Jono was saying. That you go home and it goes, aha, I'm at home now. I'll use this save set of details to connect to this home network, which would include your webkey.
Like XP.
Or like it's supposed to be. Like that fucking drop-down net app.
Let me tell you exactly what I want to happen, right?
Go for it.
I want
the moon on a fucking stick.
I want the moon on the fucking stick. I want to be able to go somewhere and click on a little icon, like the net applet thing. In fact, the net applet thing, but I want it to work.
Well, you just click on configure.
Well, you basically click on something. It displays all the networks, right? And you click on the network that you want, and it'll change to it. Right? Otherwise, when it detects an access point that is the same as a previous profile that I've used, it just switches to it. Why does it constantly try to find my work access point, which is 25 miles away?
In its defence, it doesn't know that.
Maybe we should hook in GPS. Can't find
it. Shut up, Jim. No, I mean, what it should do is, if you connect to a wireless network and you tell it, here's my web key, then it should go, well, okay, and remember that. And then the next time it sees another wireless network with the same SSID, use that fucking web key. That doesn't seem that difficult to me.
Yes. He speaks the truth.
Yeah. That's what
he needs to do. Yeah. For once.
That boy speaks the truth. One other point, right, this hooks in with this. I have a Centrino laptop.
That's where you've gone wrong, mate.
Okay.
I've got a Centrino, it's fine.
I've got a Centrino. Ah, really?
Yeah.
Ah, I'd be interested to see what you say about this. I have a Centrino laptop, and the guy who I was training over the last 2 days has a Centrino laptop. So I've installed Linux on two of them. Okay? Intel make the drivers. They write the drivers for them.
Right. IPW2200 drivers.
Exactly.
Yes.
And the 2100 driver. Okay? So they create the Centrino drivers. They also create the hardware. Yeah, it says on the website that they've found there's a few bugs that they can't quite figure out how to fix. If you make the fucking hardware and you make the software as well, there is no excuse for no fucking bugs to be found in it.
No, that's not a totally
unreasonable. This is part of the reason why everybody Intel do Linux drivers.
The IPW2200 drivers are source code released by Intel.
Oh, right.
I got the impression that they released some source code and went, right, it's no longer our problem, maintain it in an open source fashion, but that's fuck all to do with us. But
like
that,
a wiki.
But that could be a horrific calumny on Intel. I've got no idea whether that's actually the truth or not.
They do
ask
actually.
Denise Cooper.
Who's left?
Denise Cooper's left.
No, she's joined Intel.
She's joined Intel.
This is the woman
she's
who
not
was...
left Intel.
She left Sun, hasn't she?
This is the woman who was Sun's liaison about open source and has now gone
or
to Intel.
Or something, yeah.
Who most people have never heard of.
Yeah. And who bizarrely said recently, apparently in an interview for ZDNet, said she reckons that Intel is open source's silent partner.
Bullshit!
Yeah.
I think that's rubbish.
I found bizarre. I mean, not only are they massive in the trustworthy, trusted computing zone, but, I mean, what exactly have Intel done for open source?
Fuck all. They've done the Centrino drivers, but they don't
badly.
Fucking work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A lot of the Intel, is it i8-10 or something, the chipset on the motherboard,
on the motherboard
and all
yeah,
that
yeah.
sort of thing. Has that got open source drivers and were they written by Intel?
I've got...
I don't know, shit like that happens beneath my notice.
I've got an 810 motherboard and I've certainly installed Linux on it without any problems, but...
I tell you an interesting thing. When I... Again, related to Alan Cox, when I saw him at Fosden, I was talking to him about graphics cards. And something he said is that, you know, who do you think dominates the market? In terms of graphics. And it's Intel.
Intel with the integrated graphics stuff.
Yeah, it's not ATI and it's
Nvidia.
And there's the thing that pisses me off, right? It's more angry. More in the Lug Radio Angry Minute, right? You get this integrated graphics thing, you think that's a good idea, and then you find it's still 64 megabytes of your fucking RAM. Yeah. Why is that a good idea? Put a network, put a video card in my laptop, you tight fisted wank stains. Very irritating.
So, I think Intel are reasonably alright. I think they support open source. But I just think they're one of those organisations you never hear about.
They are 5/6 of the word Wintel. It strikes me they're not trying that hard to support it.
Yeah, but Wintel.
No one says Lintel, do they? No, nobody
yeah,
says.
But Wintel was coined
Lindos.
Years ago when Linux didn't really exist.
Yeah, but it's not as if it's gone away.
You didn't have OS2tel, did you?
Or Gemtel.
Gemtel.
That Denise woman was saying though that she reckons that Intel are going to come out with some more open source stuff over the next soonness.
Do you know?
She's not been the same since she split with Johnny Vaughan, has she?
I must get loads of people going, who?
All right.
His name is Johnny Vaughan.
I did have a look at the Intel stuff, and they've got this thing called open hardware. I don't really know what the deal is. See, you've had a few people talking about the idea of an open hardware specification. Whether anyone's actually building the thing, or whether they're just sitting about masturbating on newsgroups. No, that's the idea of
it. No, what it is...
Maybe it's a framework.
They've just built a case that you can actually open up on the side. That's the way it works, yeah. Sorry,
that's
it's not really Intel.
Has it got not neon outside of it?
I'll tell you one thing, if you ever see Denise Cooper selling anything,
oh, right.
selling anything on eBay, like a sofa or anything, you should buy it, because she's at every conference, everywhere. So she never gets to sit on her sofa, so it's going to be pretty new. She's absolutely at every bloody conference you can imagine. If you read the Diva blog, which is her blog.
Which has her email address, that's Sun, which if you email it, bounces because she's left now.
Because they shut her email address off the instant she walked out the door.
Then it was announced.
Incidentally, what do we think of corporate blogs?
Corporate blogs?
Not a lot, I don't know, really. I mean,
I think people get fired.
well, that's not a corporate blog. That's someone who's blogging and mentions the company they work for and then gets fired.
It's an unauthorised corporate blog.
No, I think a corporate blog is like Michael's Minute for Linspire or...
Nah, that's just a fucking article.
Or Jonathan Schwartz's.
That's just a newsletter with a blog written at the top of it.
That's not a blog.
You can't take shit you were doing 5 years ago and just go, it's a blog now, that makes it cool.
Alright then, blogs.sun.com then. That's corporate blogging.
Blogs.msdn.com.
Yeah, I mean, they're authorised. And everyone who writes for those kind of things, you see him say, well, I'm not going to write about this, and I'd like to write about that, but I can't talk about this aspect. I mean, Jeremy Zawodny at Yahoo is a canonical example of this. Really, I mean, he writes about a lot of stuff internally at Yahoo, and when jobs come up at Yahoo, he'll mention there and say, mail me as well as recruitment at Yahoo.
Right.
But he never mentioned that Yahoo were buying Flickr, the photo management people, for example. Now, obviously he's not going to, but... You know, you think, well, okay, you posted about some stuff. Is it useful to see that aspect of it, even though they're not going to mention a lot of stuff?
I think
I'm sure it is.
The thing is, with the word blogging or weblogging, right, you think to yourself, well, that's about people's personal publication. That's their personal freedom to write about what they want. And that's where, obviously, it gets in the way of corporate blogging. I mean, the whole Google bloke, what was his name?
Mark Jen.
Mark Jen. He got fired from Google less than a month of joining Google.
Yeah.
What did he do, though, that got him sacked?
Posted some stuff about how Google works internally.
Google
are really, really alarmingly harsh on the idea of people talking about how Google works.
He basically shared his experience of joining Google, and there were good experiences and bad experiences.
Right.
Now, this has happened with various people. Do you remember the bloke...
That's not a corporate blog, though. To me, a corporate blog is something that's endorsed by the corporate company.
But I think
that's what you just said.
I think there's a middle ground that you know, because a lot of people are saying, okay, something that's endorsed by the company is not a weblog; it's marketing material, and we're not interested in it. So people try and root around it. So there's some kind of middle ground in between people just writing what they want to write and writing and the company's marketing department writing something that they want people to hear.
Sorry,
that's where it goes wrong.
So there should be something in the middle, I think, where you've got people who work for the company writing about what they want.
They should be
about
in the middle.
The company. Malcolm in the middle, but. you know, I mean, I think people are still trying to find their feet in it, and the problem is that if you step a little bit too far in one direction, then you get fired.
So it's the end of the show. Let's do some emails.
It is.
Emails.
It's hang on.
I'm hanging. All right. I'm going to pass around this enormous fucking Sony bio.
Shall I read out the first one?
I bet you've got it in your hand.
Your penis is right in front of me. Okay.
Is that the widescreen edition?
No. Yes, actually. Okay, we had a...
It's been short.
It's been short screen, yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
It does. Mine's got a short screen as well. I quite like it. But I bought it deliberately because mine's a nice, slim laptop. Jono bought that because he didn't have enough fucking doors to keep.
I think he got given it.
Look at it. It weighs about 9 tons. It stretches the definition of...
Read the email, Jono.
Anyway, we had an email from a guy called James Bose. And he says, hello, Log Radio.
He's dead, isn't he? Oh, that's James Brown.
James Bowie. He said,
thank you so much for the programme, guys. It's funny, technically relevant, and always enjoyable.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And he says, he goes on to say, I was thinking of ways to show my appreciation.
Uh-huh.
Steady on, James. I don't want anything arriving in the post.
I do, if it's not your you know,
jism. So he said, beyond putting money in the tip jar, as I'm from Canada and the Canadian dollar is worth like 3 pence.
Yeah.
He spells pence, P-E-N-T-S.
3 pence in our pocket is better than in yours, mate.
So more to the point, first of all, you know, just a single pent is fine.
Get rid of all that pence of aggression.
He said, coincidentally, I'm helping to organise an open source conference where is it he's from again? Canada.
Canada.
Yeah, so that's great. Thanks very much, James.
No, let's give the details.
I think he's doing some free advertising even though he didn't send us money.
All right, then. Hang on. Hey, we'll send us some money.
We'll give him three pence worth.
Selling out a bit.
He said it's called CEOS, the Conference on Engaging in Open Source. It's at www.ceos.dal-acm.ca, which sounds Californian address, isn't it?
No, it's Canada.
Is it Canada?
Yes. I thought it was California.
Do you think Terence and Philip are going to go to it?
California's not got their own top-level domain. That's not how it works.
They should do. There should be one for Wales and Bristol. All right, click on the tabac.
Right, okay, hang on.
Tabac and out.
I've got to use this barely portable laptop. Right,
So, James, thanks for your email. Everyone go to his conference.
Email from Theron Conray.
Is that your real name?
Saying, thanks a lot for a great show. Keep on keeping on, Theron.
And on.
That next email better not be like 3 pages long after yours was like short.
That's all she wrote, apparently, so bring on.
Is it a she?
Hey, Rope, sorry.
Or maybe she.
Sorry, Theron.
Okay, here's an email from Matt Grondin. Dear Log Radio people.
Doesn't he do The Simpsons?
Yeah, it's Martin. And Futurama.
Martin Grondin, just for clarification.
Just for clarification, it's someone fucking different.
The bird in Futurama.
With the
attractive or not?
Well, the one with one eye.
No,
it is just me, isn't it?
First of all, she's got one eye, and secondly, she's Peggy from Married with Children.
Yeah, my friend says to me, "Have you seen a person who records the voice?" And I'm like, "No." He goes, "You don't want to." Anyway, Mark Grondin, Dear Log Radio people, I have to say that the show's really good. Brilliant.
Thank you very much, Martin.
I do have to make one strange observation. It seems that when you say hula, sometimes it sounds like hooter or hooah.
Hula.
Honestly, I had no clue why he would be screaming in glee at hooters. It's an awful place. I guess being a Yank has its disadvantages. Anyway, great show.
Blame your president.
It's hula.
Yeah.
Hula.
Hula. How can they vote him in twice? Anyway, sorry.
Speaking to the microphone.
Let me just flick the tab.
It's my turn.
Matt gets a go. Matt gets a go.
Matt, this might be too big for your little house to
hold. Oh, man. That's like 6 pages long.
Got Michael Yikes. No, Michael Sykes. Hi, guys. As I'm typing this email, I'm listening to episode 11, and it is a piece of... Quality noise! Yay! Brosie special prize, quality noise! Which is received by my ears, you can take that as a compliment. So, anyway, he's been listening...
Be shocked if he'd listened to it up his arse.
He's been listening.
Why not? We talk out of ass.
He's been listening to every episode since season 2 and he likes it a lot. Thanks a lot, mate. But, anyway, he's written an extraordinarily long... email about how he started to write Trash Applet and he's basically a gnome hacker. Yeah. Let me scroll down.
He wrote the Trash Applet?
I think so.
That's cool.
Do you want to know something fascinating? I was reading Planet Gnome the other day and he posted something to it.
That's Planet Gnome?
Planet Gnome. No, planet.gnome.org. And he posted something. He posted a screenshot and I didn't think anything of this. I know who he is, but I didn't realise he'd sent us an email. Looked at the screenshot and in the corner of the screenshot there's Lug Radio, the latest episode.
Really?
So nice on Michael.
Score.
So anyway,
I like him a lot.
He's going on about some gnome stuff, and he's talking about the evolution data server and stuff like that.
Oh, this is me getting a kick in for
bring
saying
it on.
I think maybe you should read it. Completely wrong.
Yeah, give it to that red bearded fool over there.
So we'll talk about some other stuff while he's reading that.
Okay.
Be quick.
Let me have a look at this. I said that all the cool gnome stuff depends on evolution.
Yep.
And he says, no, it fucking doesn't. In slightly long terms, he says...
It's really in with the Log Radio vibe, isn't it?
There is a simple way you can look at it. All the stuff like the Clock Applet, Beagle, Game are using the evolution data server because it is an easy existing way to incorporate applications. But it is... it is as easy as possible to integrate a non-Evolution app, but nobody has ever done it yet. But I really think known developers would be grateful and accept patches to integrate other apps than Evolution stuff with Beagle Evolution, etc. It's just that nobody's done it yet. So,
yeah.
Okay, I mean, I can sort of see his
point. So you're massively wrong again?
No, because it does all depend on Evolution.
It doesn't have to depend on it, is what the point he's making.
If you're prepared to take all the integration that everyone's done with Evolution and do that integration with Thunderbird instead, then you could install GNOME without it. What annoys me about it is...
Remember, desktops are dead.
As far as I can tell, although you, if you're compiling your own GNOME, or you're running Star GNOME, or something
There's
like
that...
There's
a law against that, isn't there? Compiling your own GNOME.
If you go and get GNOME from a distributor, then you can't get GNOME without Evolution. It might be theoretically possible to build all that shit without the integration, but in practice, you can't do it. If you, say, go and get Game and the Clock Applet and stuff, it will go and get Evolution for you, like it or not. And if you remove Evolution, it will remove GNOME.
Why don't we see what he replies to that, then?
Because I don't fucking use it. It takes up about 100 megs of space on the drive that I'm never going to use.
Anyway,
and GNOME refuses to allow me to stop it being the mail application, which means
that is annoying.
Ken Adams is trying to muscle his way in.
I've heard that name.
Yeah, he wrote...
wasn't he the judo guy?
He wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I think I've heard Ken Adams read his email and replied to it.
He says,
I believe that was Douglas.
He says, hi,
Ken
guys.
Ken Douglas.
What, Douglas Heard?
The Heard.
He says, hi, guys. To start off, congrats on an excellent show.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
To introduce myself, I started using Linux late 97 with an early Slackware using it for amateur radio. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
He explains how he got started setting up Hantslog.
Of course, that's why.
Hugo
Mills, who looks like
Linus Torvalds
with long hair.
He was just the boss from it.
And he also says, I now run Ubuntu on the desktop on my own SME server on the XL. And he says in capital letters, Ubuntu rocks.
Yeah.
Looking forward to Lug Radio Live. More on that later.
Yeah, hey.
Plans
going
to
be quality.
There, if all goes well, with one of the first members of Hantslog, see you there.
Woo. Thanks, Ken. Now I remember why I knew your name. Gomez. That's what you call yourself on the forum, isn't it?
Gomez.
We know where it's at.
Keep going. For Lug Radio Live, we ought to get some stones, right? And paint Lug Radio on them. And then we can put a big sign that says Lug Radio Rocks. £1.
Yeah.
Well, anyone's welcome to my Lug Radio Rocks.
There'll be a special form on the website to isn't book your
Lug,
time.
Isn't it Lug Radio Rock?
Aid one block.
One block around the block.
Aid monoblock.
Monoblock.
Right, Chris Jones has written in to say, I agree with what was said in episode 11 about the GNOME documentation, as in there is sod all, not a dribble. You are quite right. This is especially true of the Python, GNOME, and GStreamer bindings. You are even more right. He then goes on to say something fairly contentious, which is...
your shit.
Python people should write
shit.
Documentation, even if they don't want to. We should fucking make them do it. Listen,
yeah,
I know it is unfair to expect hobbyist programmers to provide us with documentation if it is against their inclination, but I don't care. They should be annoyed, hounded, and possibly bribed until they do. I admire your foresight, but don't be surprised when the next time you download the Linux kernel, it fucking deletes all your files.
He should be on our show for the fact that he's got his,
got what?
Strong opinions and stuff.
Is there another tab over here? Oh my lord, there is. Dear Anne.
What?
It's a spam.
Click
move.
Here or in a picture below. You'll find a short online game. A chance for an amusing, lucrative home job.
What? Thanks very much.
I want a lucrative home job.
It's a short game, is it? Matt will be familiar with those. Any game Matt plays.
Mark Johnson says, hello, gang. Firstly, let me say thanks for the show
bangers.
So far. Loving the show, and I'm really pleased with the way it's taken off. Good on you, lads.
Thanks.
Thanks. Aren't we the people who are supposed to be really pleased with the way it's taken off? So we're supposed to be really pleased that it's really funny every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's pointed up an article in Linux Magazine. You can search for it on the internet.
That's Linux Magazine.
And he says, they're saying that there is a common thread with all the good distros, and that is that they all have Debian as a parent. So I can agree with
bollocks.
That, yep.
Bollocks, I think, is the answer to that.
Xandros, Linspire, Licorice are all...
Stop calling it licorice.
Because it reminds me of comment Jono. Como Jono said.
Homo Jono.
Yeah, Jono the commie.
No, but yes, I think you are. A few weeks back, Debian could be seen as a meta distro, blah, blah, blah. Not blah, 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 John, no. So anyway, keep up all the good work. See you at Lug Radio Live. Yeah,
I got one thing to say to you about Debian.
Who's Mark 6?
Debian Stable.
Debian
which
stable.
Is anything but
Debian Stable is not stable and
right.
is arse.
Anyway,
I agree.
Stop your ramblings. Let's talk about donations.
Yep.
There have been quite a few recently.
My word.
I just am amazed.
Thank you very much. We've had difficulty coping with the amount of money roaring towards us. It's been like the trade deficit. Or
and
something.
I'm happy
Thank
to report
much.
That we are recording this version of Lug Radio Live with, count them, four microphone stands.
Four mic stands.
Oh, it's so much better. Thank you so much for your donations.
Microphone stands? Who should we
Matt Ravel is
everyone who's donated. Everyone.
You're all talking at once.
That never happens.
That's the problem with loads of microphone stands.
Yes, there's four microphone stands. We'll Woo! Have to take a picture for the evidence and pass it to the forums. Anyway, these names are in no particular order, but thank you very much for...
Well, they're in eight.
I want a round of applause from each one of you, okay? Because I can't clap because I'm holding this bloody thing because it weighs a ton.
You can just have the clap.
Okay, I've already got the clap. Russ and Jen!
Yay!
Thank you, Russ and Jen.
Something good had to come out of Cumbria.
Tell you schwack, you said that. Yeah. One of the benefits is it gets flooded every year.
That's Norfolk.
Anyway, the second donator... was Daniel Dan's Guardian Woo! Baron.
Yay!
Is his surname's Guardian?
Dan's Guardian, that's
Guardian.
Right.
Is that like Granny's Guardian on the BBC?
When I eat poke, I sneeze.
Okay. It was in there. It said, what's your favourite food? You typed in something, and then it said, when I eat favourite food, I sneeze.
I never want to see Pope. I never want to see my grand's garden.
You thought it was funny when we were like, four?
Oh, girls have arrived. Oh, my God.
People arriving. We're recording.
Some girls walked in. The Lug Radio groupies are here.
Come and say hello.
It's never happened.
Hey.
Susan, her mum or something.
Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Nikki.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Nikki. How you doing?
Hi.
Hi. Thank you.
There were obviously lies.
Yeah, some people have bombasted into the Lug Radio studio. We're recording a radio show. That's all right. I'll see you in a second. Okay, that was unexpected and
Thanks
quite
that.
Strange.
And then being naked as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Lesbian sex for me.
I got a very quick blowjob.
So
I always thought you were a lesbian.
Third person.
third person. The third donor.
Is... Oman.
Yay!
Yay! Go Oman.
Who also runs the BitTorrent mirrors.
Well done.
That's
so
right,
big
yeah.
score to Oman. Although apparently someone tried to download the high quality org from BitTorrent a week or so ago and it wasn't there.
Ah.
So
we've had one or two problems with the feed as well, but I think you've rectified
it. I
that
have
now.
Fixed
yeah.
the feed.
Finally.
Woo! I have fuck right.
Really
off.
Simple syndication.
Yeah, really paid in the arse.
Okay.
Blame Dave Weiner.
Final person, right? And then let's give this guy a big round of applause too. Rich Wareham.
Thanks,
hey!
Rich.
Nice, Rich.
Thank you. Four donations. Thank you very much. We didn't have a tip jar because it was just too full.
Too full.
We
yeah, without up. Without
Bye.
Tips.
See you later.
Bye.
Nice to meet you.
See you later.
She
just says she hopes she's on the radio.
She will be. I think she might think we're Radio 4 or something. I don't want to disappoint you.
I don't think she's under any impression or illusion that we're Radio 4.
It's four of us.
So, anyway, let's talk about Lug Radio Live.
Oh, yeah.
Look, it's going to be freaking fantastic. Wait till you hear what we've got lined up.
It's going to be fantastic. It's just, for those of you who don't know yet, it's on the 25th of June, 2005, at the Molyneux Stadium in Wolverhampton.
Yes.
Yep.
You can find out
but
more
there
about
are good
it,
things.
You can find out more about it at www.lugradio.org/live/2005
yep.
or just www.radio.com.
Yep, what he said.
I'll shut up. Someone else speak.
So, what you're trying to say is live sim links to live/2005.
Yes.
Okay.
Should we read out our confirmed speakers so far?
I think we should, and we should make up some as well.
I think we should. But these are the ones we're not making.
These are
up.
The real ones.
Real one. Ian Bell.
Oh, yes.
Ian Bell co wrote the legendary. Elite game with
this
the other black.
This is
going to
be so cool.
David Brabham.
He's the reason I bought a computer in the first place.
Exactly.
And you're not joking about that, are you?
Oh, no, no.
So you walked past a shop window of the shop Ye Olde Computer Shop.
Absolutely, it was, yeah.
The bald shop of computer bits. So, anyway, we've got Ian Bell. We've got Sarah Ewan, who is the PlayStation 2 Linux
PlayStation
lady.
Bird, yeah.
Does she actually work for Sony?
She works for Sony,
yeah.
Yes.
I've listened to her talk before.
Interesting.
So we've got Sarah Ewan coming down. We've got Andrew
Easy
Lewis.
On the eye as well.
Andrew is the
Spline Scan.
Spline Boy,
Splinescan.co.uk.
This is going to be
an
great.
Awesome project.
He's going to come down, and he's got a 3D scanner that he built at home.
out of lasers. He bought a map.
Out of a fucking bulb, a bit of sellotape.
And some chewing gum.
Seriously, it's like, you know, sticky back plastic whole kind of Blue Peter vibe with yoghurt pots, and it's a 3D scanner.
And he's going to come down with a big one and scan Lug Radio Live visitors. How cool is that?
That's over at splinescan.co.uk, is it?
Project Splines, yeah, splinescan.co.uk, that's right.
Brilliant.
We've got Gervase Markham, who is a Mozilla guy. He's coming down to do a talk entitled Fishing, Conning the Unwary for Fun and Profit.
That's fishing with a PH, obviously. That's,
yeah, not just like fishing.
There you go. It was an 18-inch trout, and they go, no, it was only 12-inch.
No. Now, if you wanted someone to come down and do a talk at Lug Radio Live who knew a lot about embedded development and had a very, very round head, who would you
I picked John Masters.
John Masters.
John Masters is coming.
John Masters is coming down to do a round-headed talk about round heads.
I bet his attitude's a bit cavalier, though.
Oh dear.
So we've also got a guy called Drew McClellan coming down.
Yep. Drew from allinthehead.com.
He's the one who's got an armadillo for a head.
Fair enough.
He's got an armadillo that gives him head.
Next.
We've got Bill Thompson, who is a
BBC blogger and general.
Has he got a corporate blog?
Invented the internet sort of bloke.
He invented the internet.
Yeah, well, he was like, yeah, kind of.
It used to be called the Billnet, but it didn't take off. So anyway, if we've then got.
Have we got room for all these people to do talks?
We've also got Colin Watson, who is a Canonical developer and Debian installer hacker and general.
Does
nice
Ubuntu
player.
Things.
So what do you think of his hairstyle?
You bastard.
I think knows Colin very well, by the way. This is not just general abuse that you normally get.
I think your hair's great, Cam. Ignore everything that everybody says about you having a Davy Crockett hairdo. It was Jono who said that, not
me. It was not me, you like.
What is a Davy Crockett hairdo?
You see him and you'll go, Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
Does that mean like he's got a raccoon tail off his head or something?
Yep. Oh.
He's got long ginger hair. Hasn't he?
He's cool, Cam.
Yeah, poor guy.
Colin Watson's a very cool guy.
He's a very intelligent guy as well, and I'm looking forward to his talk.
He's a startlingly intelligent guy. Brain the size of a planet. It's really disturbing.
And finally, the final confirmation that we've got here is Simon Willison. He's a big web bloke, so he's going to come down and do
And we've got loads more, but we're still waiting to hear back from.
Yep, and we've contacted. We should actually read out the people who've declined us.
No, Patrick Moore. No, I don't see why they should get any publicity, apart from Sir Patrick Moore.
Dominic Diamond!
You money grabbing
Dominic
bastard.
Diamond has turned us down.
Has he turned
what
us down?
What did he say? As I'm aware, he's turned us down. Because he wants money. Dominic, prove us wrong. Not that you're listening to this. Everybody email Dominic Diamond and tell him to come along.
Can I just say, though, we'll still be on the radio probably in 5 years' time.
Yeah. Okay, so... Let's wrap this mother up.
Well, we ought to say, though, how much it's going to cost to go to Lug Radio
Live. Okay, right, the way the money's going to work
is... listen closely, this is how it's going to work.
Officially, Lug Radio Live tickets are £5.
And it will cost you £5 on the day.
Yep, you come on the day, it'll cost you £5, you pay beforehand...
And we'll punch you in the face as well.
Pay beforehand, it'll cost you £5. It'll cost you £5 in cash on the door. If you're paying beforehand, you can pay with no checks. You can pay over the website now, or we'll put something
special. That's a bit like PayPal, but cheaper for us and based in Leeds.
And easier for you. Right?
Oh, yeah, and you don't have to have an account. You just use your credit card.
You don't have to get butt-fucked by PayPal.
Yeah.
the important point is, not that anyone ever is butt-fucked by PayPal, in case PayPal are listening, but hypothetically. Anyway, the important point is... The concession price is £3, and you can have a concession as long as you can think up a good reason why you should have a concession and mail it to us.
It's got
to
be humorous.
Oh, and by the way, we'll read them out.
Yeah, we will read out the good ones, and particularly the bad ones.
Yeah, well,
so your concession could be...
If it's really bad, we charge them £6.
Yeah. It could be that I've got a bit of a gammy leg, or I'm unemployed, or it could be...
Or I've got red hair.
I went to space once, but, you know, that makes you rich.
You could legitimately say, if you have, for instance, no imagination, you might say, I have already donated money to Lug Radio Live, or...
I think we might let them off with that one,
You might say, I run a mirror, or something like that, and we'll probably consider that grounds for concessions, but it's a bit wimpy. Think up something cool, and mail us. And if it's good, you get the concession price. If it's bad, you'll probably get the concession price anyway, but we'll all read it out on the show and take the piss out of you.
Where do they mail their concessions to?
That's show@lugradio.org.
Notice it's not live. It's show at lugradio.org. No other address, please. Show at lugradio.org. And we'll probably put a button on the website. If you want to pay the full price, and just go ahead with the £5. We'll give you a nice button on the website. And, of course, you can feel free to donate towards Lug Radio Live as well if you want to, because it's going to cost us a fortune to put this thing on.
And incidentally, yeah, if you do donate, we love you anyway, and we're going to give you a confession. Confession?
Confession! So,
Father, forgive me for I've sinned. It's been 16 years since the last time I listened to Lug Radio.
That's not how it works.
So, thank you very much, Alan Cox. It's been a good show.
Hang on, there's more to say.
Oh!
There's more to say.
Shooting the paintball!
You nearly shot your load too soon, man.
I did, yeah. But
again.
I can buy more load for £5.
Yeah. So, the day after Lug Radio Live, we're going to be having some paintball in a town called Shirley, which is nearish Wolverhampton. It's just the other side of Birmingham. And here's the deal, right? We've got a fantastic deal on VIP tickets for Lug Radio Live. It's going to cost you £15 a ticket, with all profits going towards Lug Radio Live. And what will happen is you come along on the Sunday, the day after Lug Radio Live, shoot some balls at each other, all have a good time, and that's about it, I think.
Now, obviously, it's going to be very early start. We're probably going to have hangovers, which is going to make it even more amusing. So,
especially when we all go up and shoot John Masters.
Are
we recording?
No, we're not really going to, John, honestly. Not your enormous round head.
But, yes, come and shoot paintballs at the Lug
Radio
Headshots
don't count. Yeah, we know.
Again, you'll be able to buy your ticket on lugradio.org/live from the time this is online. So,
if we get an idea of how many people are coming, that'd be good.
It's friggin' ambitious, isn't it? I have to do some work there.
Buy your tickets as soon as possible so that we know that we can actually afford to do this bloody thing.
A few details as well. For about, I think it's 100 and odd paintballs, I think it's a fiver.
Yeah, so...
How much is paintball?
He just said 15 quid.
All right,
quid.
Plus your balls.
You have to bring them. Or get them shot off.
£15.
Don't forget also the Lug Radio pub quiz. We're looking for two more teams, please.
Matt really wants this to happen. We all think it's shit, but Matt really wants
it to happen.
So, is that everything? Have we attended to business?
Yeah, man.
I think so.
Come to Lug Radio Live.
Sorry for the letters we couldn't read out. We did get a load more. So,
did we ever work out if the next show is going to be season 3?
No, it's not.
No, it's not.
No, it's obviously not.
Season 3 happens after the summer break.
Yeah. So that means we'll have a really short season and a really long season. And
then loads more really long seasons.
That's the way it works.
Look at the first season.
Okay,
that
cool.
Was short.
That's fine. Yep.
So, okay, thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Alan Cox. Thank you, everyone else who's been involved. And thank you, Jono. Thank you, Ak. And thank you, Abe.
Thank you, guys. And thank you,
Thank you, Matt Ravel.
Thank you, Adam Smith. Adam Sweet for the Ubuntu jingle.
Thank you, Adam Smith, for his contribution to economic.
Nero's
jingle. Invisible Hand and all that, the Wealth of Nations. Thank you very much, Adam Smith.
Stuart Mill while we're here.
Anyway. Thanks to my parents who've shown me love. And
thank God.
Most of all, God, yes.
See you later, guys.
Bye.
Oh, Morris, thanks.